to fight for the little guy. Instead, they doled out $1.5 trillion in tax cuts aimed at billionaires and corporations. Don't boo. No. Let me tell you something. Republicans can't hear you boo, but they can hear you vote.
Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, did they ever hear us this week? Welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 271. My name is Melvin. I want to thank you so much for being here. So I've got some questions for you. Perhaps you've even got some for me, and maybe there's some that I can answer without you even asking. So I was as much looking forward to this show as I was nervous about this show. What in the heck am I going to say about the Blue Wave? Now, I have to admit, I did not absorb a lot of the television coverage on the night of the election, and I didn't do so for any number of reasons. First and foremost, I do not like horse races. I have never gone to the track. I have never bet on the ponies. It is just not my thing. And the way politics gets treated by the national media, I don't see it as biased, but I do see it as continually making certain that it is a horse race. Because see, let's say the polls had come out and said the Democrats are definitely going to take the House, and they're going to take it by like a 20, 30, 40%, like a massive margin, right? The television dial would go click. Nobody would continue watching. They know what's going to happen. And you know, maybe at that point, they might not even vote. Because what's the point? Man, the Democrats are going to win. They're going to win by crazy numbers. I have seen it. I have seen it in cable television largely. Your local news has other things that they talk about. So they don't play this game as much over there. But if you're watching Fox, well, Fox really only goes one way. But if you're watching CNN or MSNBC, CNBC, any of the others, they have to make certain that this stays a horse race. Why? Because if they don't, you're going to turn away. And on the night of the election, I know what I was going to hear. I was going to hear all these, especially if I watch NBC, I'm going to watch all these pundits or CNN, all these pundits. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? My first job in radio was doing the Seahawks games. That's how I ended up as a Seahawks fan. So it's a three-hour game, and it's a two-hour pre-show and a one-hour post-show. So it's all over 6 hours, almost 7 hours of football programming for one game. And in the two-hour pre-game show, which, by the way, is 66% of the football game itself. Okay. The two-hour pregame show, they would talk about what might happen when these gridiron soldiers come out onto the field today. 2 hours of what is going to happen when these guys come out. I don't know. Maybe we should open the freaking gates and let them out. And then would be the game. And then after the game was over, right? So you're taking 2 hours of the pregame, 3.5 hours of the game itself, and then the game is over. Now they're going to tell you what happened on the field and why they think it happened. I don't like that pre, and I like the post even less. Here's what happened. I live on the West Coast. I did not even turn on my television until about 8 o'clock my time, Pacific Standard Time. My producer was texting me about different things that had happened. Florida, Georgia, oh my God, what's going on? And I, of course, took those, and he and I, we go back and forth. But I didn't even turn on the television until 8 o'clock. And by that point, they had already called the House for the Democrats. But there's a problem in Georgia. There's a problem in Florida. And you're damn right there is. And these elections are still going on right now. So the biggest question that I had when I went to bed on Tuesday night, was that a blue wave? After all the hype, after all the talk, after all the belly aching, after all the billions and billions and billions of dollars that were spent, was what we saw a blue wave? It was definitely this pink wave. That was the first thing I heard. All these ladies that turned out, fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. And of course, all the ladies that won, including a couple of LGBTQ. For that stuff, it was a fabulous night. So don't get me wrong. We definitely made some strides. But was it a blue wave? I'm going to say, yeah, I think that it was. See, over the 8 years that Barack Obama was president, collectively, the Democrats lost nationwide for 8 years. The Democrats lost 1,000 seats. That means 1,000 seats flipped, not just in the House and Senate, but also in state houses. See, whoever's president is the leader of the party, is the head of the party. And so whenever it flips, they tend to look and they go, man, it's that guy's fault. And what happened the other night was in the state houses, the Republicans lost over 360 seats. Now, mind you, we're 2 years in. So by the time we hit 4 years with this guy, he's gonna be, what, 70% of the way to, so, and if he stays in there for, say, 8 years, it's gonna flip like 1,200, 1,400 seats from Republican to Democrat. So he's losing far more seats than did his predecessor. The first election after Barack Obama became president, 63 House seats flipped. And how did they flip those seats? The Democrats are going to try to give you health care. Well, that's not what they said. They said they were going to push grandma off of a cliff. There were going to be death panels. They were going to come to your house and, you know, in a truck, and the truck was going to have a trailer attached to it, and the exhaust pipe was going to be plugged into the trailer. And then they put grandma inside the trailer. They pump that exhaust in the trailer. Grandma's dead. They start pumping. It's just like a whole dead grandma trailer. That's what it was going to be, because you had to vote for the Democrats. What really happened? Well, the Democrats passed health care reform. The Republicans ran on this whole kill grandma strategy. And then 6 years later, the Republicans are now running on Obamacare, the law that was passed in 2010. In the weeks leading up to the election, that was all they talked about, was how much they loved Obamacare. But they wouldn't call it that. Because remember, Obamacare was this name that they came up with so that they could make it like, like the president wanted to kill you. But now all of a sudden, they're excited about the president's ideas.
So they did not even pretend to pay for these tax cuts. And of course, deficits shot up. That's what happened. Except just 2 weeks ago, the Republican leader in Congress said, you know, now that we've gotten our tax cuts passed, we're very disturbed with the deficit. We need to bring them down. We're going to have to cut programs like Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Hey, don't take my word for it. Look it up. That's what he said. In fact, look up anything I say today, because I promise you, I believe in a fact-based campaign.
So a bunch of seats flipped. A bunch of seats are still flipping. California is notoriously slow at counting. I believe the Democrats are sitting at something like 37 House seats that they picked up right now. You know, it's not the 63 that were picked up by the Republicans in 2010, but they're still doing pretty good. And by the time they might hit 40 or better, by the time we get everything in from California, my disappointment, I used to live in Spokane, Washington, Eastern Washington. My representative over there was Kathy McMorris Rogers. Kathy McMorris Rogers won again. But you know what? Spokane is right next to North Idaho. North Idaho is where the Nazis used to have their compound before they got sued and they lost it. So it's going to be a little bit of a tougher nut to crack, or a bunch of nuts over there in Spokane to crack. The whole white power thing over there has got a pretty good stronghold. My representative now is Jamie Herrera Butler. She was challenged by Carolyn Long. That seat that Jamie holds generally doesn't get a pretty good challenge. He got a real good challenge this year. And Carolyn Long came within a couple of points. As a matter of fact, on election night, it was not settled. And it was not settled the next day. It was settled, I think, Thursday of this week. Finally, Carolyn Long conceded and said, yeah, but you should see Jamie in the interviews. Jamie Herrera Butler, because she was... Wow, she used the word, she goes, this is kind of humbling. Because it's usually the night of the election, it's automatically called for her with 1% reporting, and it's not even a challenge. But this year, she got a real challenge. But my white power conservative representative has gone back. So there, I'm disappointed. I heard about all these contests all over the United States. Man, that seat hasn't gone to Democratic hands for 30 years, 40 years. That seat's never gone to Democratic hands. And I go, and I still couldn't get rid of my representative? The disconnect with Congress has always been this. People say they hate Congress, but they love their representative. I do not. I hate my representative. And I'm just a little bit closer to running against her now. I can't run this year. Man, this year, because not only has this year passed, but yo, this year belongs to the ladies. And that's the way it ought to be.
Look at the map of the United States. There's all that red in the middle where Trump won. I win the coasts. I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent 2/3 of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic. And his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
And of course, she won by 3 million votes. But we've got a fairly underarmed Democratic system. Part of the problem with my specific area, my district, the 3rd District of Washington, is the redrawing of the districts. My district was one of the ones that was seriously redrawn to make sure that a Democrat never, ever picked it up. And so what happened this other night? The jury is not out for me. I'm going to say, yes, it was definitely a blue wave because those maps are still the same as they were when they were redrawn 10 years ago to heavily favor Republicans. And that's why it's been so hard to oust the Republicans, because Democrats don't just get to win. They've got to absolutely smash. They've got to kill in these elections. They can't just win by a few points. They got to win by dozens of points in order to get. So the fact that any of these were flipped when the map is so heavily drawn towards the Republicans, tilted to help the Republicans. Yes. Yes, we did great. And here's another thing. Florida. There's a bunch of unresolved issues in Florida. One of them is with the governor's race. Even though Gillum conceded, it's now within the margin of a recount. And then, of course, there's the Senate seat with Dum-Dum over there. So Florida still doesn't know how to run a freaking election. Almost 20 years after the 2000 debacle, Florida still doesn't know how to run a freaking election. In my state, the state just to the south of me, Oregon, we do mail-in ballots. It shows up to our house a few weeks beforehand. We fill out the freaking ballot. We mail it in whenever we want. If it's the day of, we have to make sure it's postmarked. Or if you're in Oregon, you have to hand deliver it. But they send a voter guide. And it's the easiest freaking thing in the world. And we've got massive turnout. And, you know, our states, they get to turn their results in right away. But Florida can't seem to figure it out. And I think that's by design. But that just might change. Quoting here from an article over at Vox. Florida passed a ballot initiative that will resolve voting rights to more than 1 million ex-felons in the state. As Vox's German Lopez wrote, Florida had disenfranchised more voters than in any other state. More than 10% of all potential voters, more than 20% of potential black voters in Florida have been unable to vote because of felony records. So in Florida, there's going to be a lot more voters next time around because of this ballot initiative that passed. And that is that if you do your time, you pay your fines and everything, there are ways for you to get your right to vote back. In Michigan, an anti-gerrymandering ballot initiative also got approved, which would create an independent commission of equal number of Democrats and Republicans and 5 individuals who wouldn't identify a political leaning to draw the congressional maps. That's the other thing, that now that the Democrats are in charge of the House, we get gigantic say in redrawing those maps. And I don't want this. So they were drawn to help Republicans. Yes, they were. But I don't want them drawn to help Democrats this time around. I want them drawn like an octagon, like just a big freaking shape. Not these freaking lizards that they've been drawing so they could get the hardcore right-wing Nazi representatives that they want. I want it just a big, map full of big friggin' circles or octagons. I mean, just something that's more fair where it just takes a lot of people and you don't get to pick and choose because we pick our representatives. Our representatives do not get to pick us. And as for Democrats, they made a lot of state-level pickups. One of those is with the governorships. I was talking about this a while ago. If the Republicans had gotten 60%, so 66%, 66 or 67% of the governorships, they could have pulled together what is known as a constitutional convention. And billionaires were really pulling for this because they wanted our Constitution to be completely rewritten so that it only helps the billionaires. No more helping you, freako. I think the governorships are now half and half. It's like 25, 26, you know, Republican, Democrat. They're nowhere near the number that they need to have a constitutional convention. And the next time around, the 2020 races, see, part of the reason the Democrats didn't take the Senate is because they had so many seats that they had to protect, and then they had to flip some. Well, next time around, it's going to be turned. It's going to be the Republicans that have to protect a whole lot of seats, and it's going to be a presidential election, so it's going to be a much higher turnout than maybe even this was.
You know, I didn't have anybody in my administration get indicted. I mean, I just thought that's how you're supposed to do things.
So, good news, bad news. With maintaining the Senate, the Republicans get to keep choosing white hooded judges. Bad, bad, bad. Mitch McConnell expected that to happen, though. He really must pick the judges because they are put in there forever. I think one of the things that Democrats should probably do is end the lifetime appointments for judges when they come in. Hey, you got to serve a term. 4 years, 8 years, you don't get to change the entire judiciary by stealing a couple of elections for the next 30 or 40 years. I mean, generations. It's one of the things that I think that they should definitely take up. So Mitch McConnell was asked, hey, the Democrats have the House now. And they're probably going to ask for some oversight. Are you maybe going to help them out with any of that oversight, Mr. McConnell?
What would Senate Republicans do in the event that the House Democrats try to obtain President Trump's tax records?
Well, you know, the whole issue of presidential harassment is interesting. I remember when we tried it in the late 90s. We impeached President Clinton. His numbers went up and ours went down, and we underperformed in the next election. So the Democrats in the House will have to decide just how much presidential harassment they think is good strategy. I'm not so sure it'll work for them.
Senator McConnell. Yeah. So I just to go back to that, are you recommending that for House Democrats that the oversight that they have said that they're going to do might backfire on them? Are you saying that they should?
No, they're not interested in my recommendations. All I'm doing is making a historical observation that the business of presidential harassment, which we were deeply engaged in the late 90s, improved the president's approval rating and tanked ours. Thus, my observation that that might not be a smart strategy, but it's up to them to decide how they want to handle that.
20 years ago, that's when that happened. 20 years ago, when they did that, they said they were putting checks and balances on an unchecked president who had imperialist power, da, 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 da. Now, all of a sudden, they're willing to call it exactly what it is. They're saying, we were engaged in presidential harassment. The Democrats have to decide how much they want to harass. Understand the word there. Checks and balances, right? The House is supposed to check the damn president. You know, Senate is supposed to check the damn House. Judiciary is supposed to check them all. Harassment. Well, if they really want to harass the president, and by the way, my complete waste of a representative is one of the representatives that voted against making Trump release his tax returns. So already they're reframing it. The party of law and order, and that's what they said they've been doing. They said, hey, we got to do this. You know, he boinked this intern, talking about Clinton, he boinked this intern, and we just got to put the checks and balances on him because we're the party of law and order. 20 years later, we're okay to call it exactly what it is. Presidential harassment. Because now if you Democrats want to do this to a Republican,
just know that it's harassment.
All right, let's get into some of these other races. You may remember when I played this clip last week.
You're voting for Duncan Hunter.
Yes, I am.
Can I ask why?
You know, there are things that he may or may not have done that he's been accused of, but I think he has the best interest of our vets and our country in his heart. Being accused of something and being convicted of something is two different things.
I'm not going to get into all of the things that Duncan Hunter did or all of the things that Chris Collins did. I'll give you all that. So Duncan Hunter's a representative from California, and he was using campaign contributions to buy prostitutes. Then when he got caught, he said that his wife was doing the bookkeeping and she was paying the prostitutes out of the wrong account. This is a real thing. And this Republican from California, Duncan Hunter, won on Tuesday night. Oh, no. It gets even better. And so he could go to prison soon. And I don't know how that works. I don't know if he gets to be a representative in prison. Seems to me that this seat may have to go up again, and it may flip this coming year. Chris Collins in New York, another Republican felon who might be in the pokey suit. I don't know if we call it the pokey anymore. And Republicans, the party of law and order. They had no trouble voting for either one of these guys. They can't get into other crimes. There's too damn many of them. It's just insane to me. And Matt Shea, there was an article that Rolling Stone made me hip to this. Yes, I read Rolling Stone. I used to read them a lot during the 90s for music. And they used to do a lot of political coverage. I didn't get into much of it. But older now, I definitely, because they've got these great political reporters over there. And I became hip to an article about Matt Shea, a representative from Spokane Valley, Washington. Spokane, once again, my old stomping grounds, old white power Eastern Washington. And the reason why he was being written up in Rolling Stone was because he had written a 4-page article called The Biblical Basis for War. This is a real thing. The biblical basis for war. I often complain about Christianity, not because I have a problem with Christianity, and it's fabulous, but the things that I take from it and the things that conservatives take from it are two completely different things. Now, I'm not a Christian anymore because I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in leprechauns. I don't believe in fairy tales. I don't believe in unicorns. I'm sorry, I just don't. But the things that I did learn, the base things that I did learn when I was in those religions, you know, love your neighbor, you know, welcome immigrants, you know, love them as yourself, you know, don't lie, don't steal, don't kill, you know, take care of the homeless, you know, feed the hungry, you know, clothing, those ideas, and they don't have to be religious ideas, but I loved those ideas, and I still carry those ideas with me, even if I'm not getting on my, you know, starting my day on my knees and, you know, praying to the guy in the sky. I still believe in those ideas. So I just think it's insane. As an atheist, what I still maintain from Christianity and what these guys believe Christianity is all about is just insane to me. So the headline over at the spokesman, Washington Matt, Representative Matt Shea acknowledged that he had distributed a 4-page manifesto titled The Biblical Basis for War, which describes a Christian God as a warrior and details the composition and strategies of a holy army and condemns abortion and same-sex marriage. The document is organized in 14 sections with multiple tiers of bullet points and a smattering of biblical citations. Under one heading, Rules of War, it makes a chilling prescription for enemies who flout biblical law. And it states, if they do not yield, kill all males. This is a real thing. In a video where he's talking about it, he complains about a recently published Rolling Stone profile that characterizes him as an extremist. That's because he is. And then argues that the United States is a Christian nation and asserts that his detractors are part of a so-called counterstate of Marxists and Islamists, and he dismisses criticism as nothing more than smears and slander and innuendo and implication. These are very, very, very big words for Mr. Shea. He also delves into the philosophy known as just war theory, which has been endorsed by many mainstream Christians. But critics of Shea, who embraces far-right conspiracy theories, associates with a fundamentalist religious group in northern Stevens County and champions a push for a 51st state. The guy wants a 51st religious state where I imagine nothing but war happens all the time. A 51st state called Liberty. The document that Mr. Shea is not a Sunday school project or an academic study. This, according to Spokane County Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich, which he wrote in an email. I voted for Ozzie. Ozzie's a Republican, but when I lived in Spokane, I voted for him. Ozzie says it's a how-to manual consistent with the ideology and operating philosophy of the Christian Identity or Aryan Nations movement and the Redoubt movement of the 1990s. Ozzie Knezovich got a copy of the document. I was going to go over it bullet point by bullet point with you here today, but I don't have the time. But Ozzie has went ahead and turned that document over to the FBI and says, hey, I think I've got the head of the Aryan Nations Christian Identity Movement right here in Spokane, Washington. And, of course, the good people of Spokane, Washington went ahead and reelected that representative. Your Christian nation, ladies and gentlemen, and your party of law and order.
This whole thing about flipping, they call it. I know all about flipping. For 30, 40 years, I've been watching flippers. It almost ought to be outlawed. It's not fair. If somebody defrauded a bank and he's going to get 10 years in jail or 20 years in jail, but if you can say something bad about Donald Trump and you'll go down to 2 years or 3 years, which is the deal he made, in all fairness to him, most people are going to do that. And I've seen it many times. I've had many friends involved in this stuff. It's called flipping, and it almost ought to be illegal.
Criminalize flipping. Criminalize cooperating with law enforcement. When the Benghazi tragedy happened and four soldiers died in Benghazi, my God, it was about the worst thing that ever happened. It's the most deaths we've ever had. It was even more than 9/11, and Republicans, they just freaked out about it. And oh my God, how could President Obama let these four soldiers die? Four people died, and it's all his fault.
I think Puerto Rico was incredibly successful. Puerto Rico was actually our toughest one of all because it's an island, so you can't truck things onto it. Everything's by boat. We moved a hospital into Puerto Rico, a tremendous military hospital in the form of a ship, you know that. And I actually think, and the governor's been very nice, and if you ask the governor, he'll tell you what a great job. I think probably the hardest one we had by far was Puerto Rico because of the island nature. And I actually think it was one of the best jobs that's ever been done with respect to what this is all about. The job that FEMA and law enforcement and everybody did working along with the governor in Puerto Rico, I think, was tremendous. I think that Puerto Rico was an incredible unsung success.
2,975 people died. Not all of them can be contributed to the fact that President Dumb-Dumb there decided to just not do anything, not spend money, and not help him out. And when he did show up, he decided to throw paper towels to them as if he's passing them a basketball, which is exactly what they need in a storm, is a freaking basketball. Do you remember, and it was funny hearing the Republicans run for Obamacare this year, because they were so bent way back in the day about Obamacare, that Boehner's not Speaker of the House anymore, neither is Paul Ryan. That's coming to an end here pretty quick. But Boehner actually decided that he was going to sue the president because the president, hold on now, the president was trying to get people health care.
Are you planning to initiate a lawsuit against the Obama administration and President Obama over the use of executive action?
I am.
Can you explain why that is necessary and what you hope to achieve?
You know, the Constitution makes it clear that a president's job is to faithfully execute the laws. And in my view, the president has not faithfully executed the laws.
Now, what specific executive action or actions are you planning to challenge in court?
When I make that decision, I'll let you know.
Ah, yes. He wasn't sure what. He just was going to sue him because, my God, how dare he try to get people health care? What a Christian-ass thing to do. Beto O'Rourke did not win in Texas. And it's, I suppose it doesn't matter why, but it has to be pointed out that Texas and Georgia and Florida and many other southern states have been kicking, especially African-American people, off the voter rolls by the thousands. We're going to get into that more next segment. But before, I don't think Beta's chapter is over just yet. I think we're definitely going to hear from Beta again, but I wanted to finish up this particular segment before we get to the next one with some words. So, I mean, this is one of the things that really made Beta a rock star in the Democratic Party, because in the Republican Party, if you want to be a rock star, apparently cruelty is the name of the game. But if you want to be a rock star in the Democratic Party, we follow a much different God.
So El Paso, this town that I was born and raised in, where Amy and I are raising Ulysses and Molly and Henry, happens to be one of, if not the safest cities in the United States of America. And what makes us so safe is that we are a city of immigrants and we treat one another with respect and dignity. I think that's fundamental to security, to success, to safety.
Do you want to see the Dreamers protected?
Absolutely.
Chuck Schumer was willing to trade President Trump the wall for the Dream Act. Would you take that deal?
No, I wouldn't.
And that is how you become endeared in this party. That's the kind of thing that we like to hear. That's the thing that gets all our nipples all hard and all the rest. That's where we're at. Not cruelty. Love and looking out for one another. That's where we're at. We haven't heard the last of Beta. I know that we're going to hear from him again. Maybe he'll run for president. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Easy, Mel. But I'll tell you what, he's not done yet.
Just take a look. All you have to do is go around, take a look what's happened over the years, and you'll see. Yep. There are a lot of people, my opinion, and based on proof, that try and get in illegally and actually vote illegally. So we just want to let them know that there will be prosecutions at the highest level.
So this was the story leading up to the election. This is all they could talk about on the right-wing websites. This is all they could talk about on Rush Limbaugh. I didn't even catch any of Limbaugh's show a couple days before, leading up to the because, man, the racism just got so thick during that time that it was hard for me to absorb. And then it, coming from the president, it's like no problem just being super duper.
The horde, the invasion, the brown people, here they come.
So, where are we at now? The election has happened.
There was an invasion.
What is that? Is that silence? Is that dead silence that I hear?
Is there no more invasion coming?
No. No, there never was.
What about the troops? We're going to send 15,000 troops to the border. There's going to be 15 troops for every man, woman, and child that are down there. There's going to be 15 troops with their guns locked on one child, and maybe they're going to blow that child away if he tries to vote for the Democrats.
Nope. None of it was real. None of it was ever real. But as I was saying in the earlier segment, cruelty. Why is it always cruelty? Why is cruelty always the response? So I found this story over at the Washington Post. The headline, Mexicans shower the caravan with kindness, tarps, tortillas, and medicine. It's funny, because it almost sounds Christian. Quoting here, who's financing the caravan? There's no sign here of George Soros or the Russians. Instead, the responsibility of feeding, clothing, and sheltering several thousand immigrants has been embraced by small Mexican towns along the route, with residents jumping into charity mode as if they are responding to a natural disaster, like a Christian. It was hard to walk a block in this town without seeing crates of free bottled water, tables packed with ham and cheese tortas, and relief stations filled with medical supplies donated by the community to help the people who are on this grueling march. Not shoving guns in their grills. Food. Medicine. Quoting here, we're supporting them 100%,
said Rafael Trinidad, a municipal employee, said as he passed out sandwiches to immigrants arriving along the main road. At least here they can feel good, he said. Outside her family's hardware store, Jorge Cortez, 57, had set up a table to feed immigrants, I probably mispronounced that name, I'm sorry, a lemon tea and stew using meat from her son's butcher shop. Down the street, her daughter was handing out fruit. My family has been very blessed, Cortez said. And we know that we're all brothers. What God gives us, we should share. Wow. See, I love this idea. But we do it with a lot of love, she said. For towns such as, let me get this, Pijipijipan, not far from Mexico's border with Guatemala, migration is second nature. For decades, people have hiked the back roads and ridden trains heading north. Many here say they have relatives in the United States or have migrated themselves. Central American migration to southern Mexico has caused tensions in recent years as numbers have grown. But people here understand the poverty and they understand the violence that migrants are fleeing. Today it's them. Tomorrow it could be us. This according to Lesbia Cincole, 70, who was volunteering with the Catholic Church in town to distribute food. There was a group that runs a website called immigrantfilm.org. And you may or may not have heard about them before the election, but they put out these really, really just these ads that just rip at your heart. So the ads have really great visuals, but the audio for a lot of them isn't that great because you need to see what's happening on the TV. But there is one in particular, and I can describe it to you. And when, by the way, trigger warning, what you're about to hear is one of these immigrant children just sitting on the floor and crying and just sitting right next to one of these border agents, you know, that's just looking very stoic and look, it just doesn't care that this child is just bawling and needs help and is calling for their parents right next to them. I'm going to play the ad, and if you don't want to hear it, just skip ahead 30 seconds, okay?
Is this who we are? Vote November 6th.
So think about that. Just juxtapose that next to all the people that are saying or that are treating the caravan with kindness, feeding them medicine, water, saying we know where they're at. Today it is them. Tomorrow it could be us. This is the Christian thing to do. This is what God wants us to do. And this is what we are going to do. Juxtapose that with the cruelty, the intentional cruelty that's happening at the border. And it's not over yet. So they're going to stop talking about the migrant caravan, which may or may not be here by New Year's Day. But they are going to continue demonizing anybody with brown skin. And it's so funny just watching these stories just disappear from the headlines once the election's over. It was never really a threat.
They do this every election cycle. Try to terrify folks. And then the election comes and problem suddenly magically vanishes. You never hear about it again. In 2010, they said that Bill and I, we were setting up death panels to kill your grandma. Remember that? In 2014, they said, Ebola's going to kill all of us. Shut the borders. In 2016, it was Hillary's emails. They were all wound up about that. And the mainstream press picked up on it. This is terrible. This is a breach of security. You know they don't care about that because if they did, they'd be worrying about the current president talking on his cell phone while the Chinese are listening in. They didn't care about it. They said it to get folks angry and ginned up. Now in 2018, they're telling you the existential threat to America is a bunch of poor refugees 1,000 miles away. They're even taking our brave troops away from their families for a political stunt at the border. And the men and women of our military deserve better than that.
I understand I'm playing an awful lot of President Obama clips, but yo, I gotta understand, it's just nice to have this guy on a campaign trail. Nice to have the words of a functioning adult. So the thing with how we treat migrants, the way we treat immigrants, the way we treat the women and children that are fleeing violence in South America, a lot of which America has a lot to do with. And this idea, right? So when if we're feeding people, it's too much tax dollars. Stop it. If we're housing people, that's too much money. Stop it. If we all have healthcare, stop. It's too much money. It's too much. But when it comes to the military, I couldn't help but notice there's no such thing as too much money. Or, remember, the military is a socialist organization. Now, there's no such thing as too much money or too much socialism.
Our military, it's literally being rebuilt as we speak, with literally hundreds and hundreds of planes and missiles and everything that you can imagine.
Literally.
They never had it so good because I got in Congress $700 billion this year, $716 billion last year. That's far more than they ever anticipated. I viewed it two ways. Number one, military, because it's always more important than anything else, including jobs. But number two is jobs. We make everything here.
So we've got this massive military that we can't seem to spend enough money on. Can't seem to have enough troops, can't seem to have enough planes, can't seem to have enough bombs. We have all these civilians. We're 4% of the world's population, but we own about half of the world's privately owned firearms. Gigantic military. We have more guns. We have more guns. We have people. 380 or 390 million privately owned guns in America for a population of 320 million. And I own zero guns. Who has all the damn? So what in the flip are we preparing for with this massive military and all these guns? I think, and I've brought this idea up before and it wasn't very popular and it didn't catch on, and that's okay, but Melvin has an idea that has just been bolstered by another article that I read. Ah, there is an article over at The Guardian and the headline reads, "The American Civil War Didn't End." Oh yes, here I go. And Trump is a Confederate president. Quoting here, "It's the 158th year of the American Civil War, also known as 2018. The Confederacy continues its recent resurgence. Its victims include black people, of course, but also immigrants, Jews, Muslims, Latinos, trans people, gay people, and women who want to exercise jurisdiction over their own bodies. The Confederacy battles in favor of uncontrolled guns and poisons, including toxins in streams, mercury from coal plants, carbon emissions in the upper atmosphere, and oil exploitation in previously protected lands and waters. Its premise appears to be that protection of others limits the rights of white men, and those rights should be eliminated. The Brazilian philosopher of education, Paulo Freire, once said that the oppressors are afraid of losing the freedom to oppress. Of course, not all white men support extending that old dominion or domination, but those who do see themselves as their privileges are under threat in a society in which women are gaining powers and demographic shift is taking place to U.S. In the U.S., to which white people will be a minority by 2045. I don't care. Fine. I'm fine with white people. I'm white. I'm fine with being a minority. If you are white, you should consider that the Civil War ended in 1865, but blowback against the Reconstruction, the rise of Jim Crow, the myriad forms of segregation and deprivation of rights, freedoms, and violence against black people kept the population subjugated and punished into the present in ways that may as well have been called war. It's worth remembering that the KKK also hated Jews back then, Catholics, that the ideal whiteness was anti-immigrant, anti-diversity, anti-inclusion. The Confederate flags went up not in the immediate post-war period of the 1860s, but instead the Confederate flags went up in the 1960s. Another way to talk about the United States as a country at war is to note that the number of weapons in circulation is incompatible with peace. With 5% of the population, oh, here it is, 5% of the world's population and 35 to 50% of the guns in civilian hands. More guns per capita than anywhere else, and more gun deaths, too. Is it any surprise that mass shootings, an almost entirely male and largely white phenomenon, are practically daily events? Not practically, they are. Many synagogues, Jewish community centers, black churches, and public schools now engage in drills that are preparations for the gunman who might arrive. The gunman we've met so many times in the aftermath of news stories, who is miserable, resentful, and feels entitled to take lives and is all too well equipped to do so. The psychological impact of drills and fear and the financial cost of security are attacks on people's access to guns, and so are the deaths. So what do you think? Is he? Is Trump a Confederate president? Is all this preparation for war and all these guns and all these shootings on a daily basis and the fact that we have to live under constant fear that somebody will just kick down any door that we are standing behind in a movie theater or a church or this room that I'm standing in right now and just blow us all to hell because they're white and they feel entitled and how dare you challenge their whiteness? Are we still inside the Civil War right now or am I going too far?
You can't have dinner. Can't have dinner. Do you see what they're doing to our people? I mean, see what they're doing to people that represent our thought? And we're being so nice. We're being so nice. And let's stay being nice, right? We'll stay being nice. Because we are tough as hell. We're going to stay nice. We're going to stay nice. No, we want to be nice. We're much tougher. We're much smarter. We're much more sane. We believe in the process. We don't run around like Antifa with the little arms and then go home, back home into mommy's basement. And put on the black uniform and the black helmet. Oh, it's so disappointing when those helmets fall off and you look at this weak little face, isn't it? And they hit people with clubs, you know? They hit them again and again. Oh, they're so lucky with nice. Oh.
It's become pretty clear to me over the duration of his presidency that he's not interested in being the president of the United States. He's really only interested in being the president of the people that are in that crowd, the people that are on his mailing list, the people that vote for him in the deep southern states. He's only concerned with being the president of the Confederacy. And he does it over and over again. He should be president for all of us. Should try to be president for all of us. He should be trying to bring us together. But the very idea of bringing Americans together is little more than a joke for him.
I shouldn't say this because I want to unite. I do eventually want to unite. But the fact is, we're driving them crazy. We're driving them crazy. They don't know what to do. They're going loco, loco. That's all right. Hopefully it's going to all come together someday like a beautiful puzzle.
One of the first things President Obama said when he won the presidency in 2008, he said, even if you didn't vote for me, I want to be your president. And those words right there just enraged all the Republicans. They go, How dare he? Right? And then they complained for 8 years that all he did was divide this nation. And we've got this guy who's proven time and time again that he only wants to be the president of the Confederacy. And so he was asked, you know, post-election, hey, there's one thing you could change, Mr. President. Just one thing you could change. What would that be?
Is there anything, as you look back at your first almost 2 years, that you regret, that you wish on you, that you could just take back and redo?
I would say tone. I would like to have a much softer tone. I feel to a certain extent I have no choice, but maybe I do, and maybe I could have been softer from that standpoint, but I want to get things done.
I have no choice, but maybe I do. I don't know. What is this microphone doing on my face? Who are you? Are you one of my, are you in my audience? Should I yell racist things to you? I don't know what to say. When Obama was giving his speeches, and by the way, he gave a speech in Florida. And you heard him. He's fired up. By the time he got up to Georgia, poor guy didn't even have a voice anymore. But there he went, just fighting all the same. And while he was up there, now understand that when somebody begins razzing Trump at a rally, you know, if one of us, normal, non-Confederate people, gets into his rallies, whoa, and we start raising hell, we could get punched, we could get kicked, we could get stabbed. And then he, from the stage, he promises to pay the legal bills of anybody who beats up that hippie right there. Let's contrast. So when Obama was giving his speech in Florida, and you'll hear it in this clip,
somebody in the audience decided that they were going to give him a little bit of hell. They were going to heckle him. And just listen to the way he handles this heckler versus the other guy that says, kick his ass and I'll pay your legal bills.
The point is that cutting Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid to pay for tax cuts for folks like Rick Scott does not sound like fighting for a little guy to me. You want somebody...
There it is. That's the guy yelling in the back right now. And of course it's a guy.
You know, I think, hold on a second. There's an interesting observation I want to make. Why is it that, hold on. Why is it that the folks that won the last election are so mad all the time?
And that became the story, not what the guy was yelling in the audience, not what, you know, the story became, wait a minute. You guys won last time. Couldn't help but notice, y'all just mad all the time. What's that about?
It's an interesting question. I mean, like when I won the presidency, at least my side felt pretty good. You know, I don't know why. It tells you something interesting. That even the folks who are in charge are still mad. Because they're getting ginned up to be mad.
So the headline over at Think Progress, Ivanka, now remember, Ivanka Trump supposedly shut down her business, shut down her brand. But this happened over the election week. Headline, Ivanka Trump's shuttered business wins Chinese trademarks. She won about 16 new Chinese trademarks. One of those trademarks includes voting machines. Now, wait a minute. Ivanka Trump has a trademark for a voting machine that will be produced in China. A voting machine that will be used in our elections. What in the holy hell could she need with a voting machine? God, that's interesting. So peep this. There is still an election going on in Georgia. Stacey Abrams has not yet conceded. And that's because there were an awful lot of black people stripped off of the rolls just for being black. Awful lot of black people that were turned away when they did get to the rolls. So I've got a clip here. This is Christine Jordan and her granddaughter. And this comes from Greg Palast's website. And so these two were outside of a polling place crying. And Christine Jordan, the grandma, the older woman, says, you know, I remember when we did not have the right to vote. And I'll play the clip for you. So I remember when we did not have the right to vote. And here we are, you know, 50, 60 years later. And she says, I go in to vote. I've been wiped off of the rolls. Right? She's African-American. So they've been wiped off of the rolls, and not just that, there's not even a record that I have ever even voted.
I mean, has this ever happened to you before?
Never.
How long you been voting?
Oh, my life, ever since I was old enough. But I've been voting right here, ever since 1968.
Yeah. And it's just, it's horrible. And I say that because the West End, she's been in this community back when we could, when they were doing sit-ins. She held civil rights meetings at her home. And today to come out and not be able to vote and no one can give you an explanation, like, it's extremely emotional and it bothers me. It bothers me to my core. Like, there's actually no record of her whatsoever voting in any election whatsoever, and it's ridiculous.
So Greg Palast has been doing all of the work on this. If you go to gregpalast.com, he's got these clips. He's suing several Secretary Republicans of State who have, and that's why Republicans want to be Secretary of State, because they want to count the votes. Because dang, dag nabbit, they realize that white people still, and it's been for like 50, 60 years now,
white people, I guess, about 60 years now, yeah, white people overwhelmingly vote for the Republican every time. But with whites becoming a minority, you can see on the horizon where there might be a time where Republicans might not be able to play to the racist base to win anymore. The Confederates, my God, after all this time, still trying to win. So I heard this fabulous interview that Hallie Jackson did with Seth Meyers. And it reminded me of the good thing that did come out of this week.
The Russia investigation is the reason he fires Jeff Sessions. Obviously, that's a little bit more stressful for him now that the Democrats have taken back the House and they have this power of oversight. Do you think, obviously, based on the press conference today, it struck me that this was a man who was a little stressed out. Is it likely that that's what's stressing him out?
Part of it, yeah. I think he's, listen, for the first time, he's now in Washington. He's inside the White House, and he is facing a check on his power. That has not happened for him before.
People got mobilized. People came out. They fought. They voted in gigantic numbers. They beat all of the odds. The House was supposed to stay Republican because, remember, it's tilted heavily in their favor. And yet, we still managed to get power back. You know, we have a gay governor of Colorado, right? And all these LGBT people that won that night were kissing their significant others of the same sex. There are two Muslims that are now going to Congress. Mike Pence, who has to swear in all the new members of Congress, now has to help these two Muslim, I think they're Muslim women, swear like on the Quran. He's the hold the damn Quran, and they get to swear in on the damn Quran, and Mike Pence gets to get all oogie about it. This is real change. We made some good strides. We made some real change. But I don't want everyone to fall back in their chairs now and go, up, I did my job. Lace your fingers behind your head and go, yep, did my work. Don't I got anything else to do now? Because this fight is not over. I'm sorry. We need you. We need you for a little bit longer. And the little bit longer is going to translate to anywhere between a few years up until the day you die. You don't ever get to stop. You don't get to stop voting. You don't get to stop caring. And it is so that you do not wake up again and have some rich, petulant, white POS as your president. Some misogynist, racist, white supremacist. I could go on. To make sure that you never, ever wake up again and have that happen, you need to stay engaged. And I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it. But I think I have to say it. 2020 starts right now.
Who may be on the next ballot? Don't kill me. We're talking about 2020 because whether you like it or not, it has begun today. I'm sorry. Okay, that's after the break.
I'm sorry. Don't kill me. 2020 starts today, but you can't just fall back and just, I did my job because the fight is never over and your work is never done. I'm proud of what we accomplished, but let's not lose it by getting lazy again or getting apathetic. Let's do this. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like I said, facebook.com/tficpo. You can find our app at the Podbean store. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it in lots of the places where you find your usual podcast. Just look for The Fire You Can't Put Out. Don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement, or inquiry. You can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity, talking about Paul Ryan, in favor of prosperity. Welcome. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, don't go back to sleep. Good morning.